roller coaster day if you follow everything that happened. It kind of began with optimism because the owners, baseball, sounded like they were going to get away from that 50-50 salary split, which we know the players were dead set against. But then late in the day, you hear that the proposal they made involved some massive additional pay cuts. Players Association extremely disappointed by every report. There's also still a gap, a good-sized gap from what I understand, between the players and the owners in the safety protocols that were put forth, the 67 pages a couple weeks ago. So I thought we would finish the day with optimism. Instead, it sounds like the two sides are digging in a little bit. Now, let's see what the players come back with. Players supposedly have a plan that would defer salary. Owners don't like it, but maybe that'll get them a couple steps in the right direction. Again, I've been telling you guys from the start, you can't overreact to any one day's news in a negotiation because, by definition, you've got two sides who are going to be on opposite sides trying to get the best deal they can get. But today was not good. Today was bad news for baseball.
TC, speaking of overreactions, I mean, I'm seeing headlines saying this is one of the most important weeks in the history of baseball, seeing the last 25 years. Do you buy into that?
Yeah, sure. Because an entire season's at stake. I mean, the only times we've had anything close to this is when you talk about a work stoppage, you know, when they lost the World Series back in the 1994 season. You know, those are the only times we've had talks that literally had the game hanging in the balance. In this case, you know, we're talking about the truncated 2020 season, but make no mistake, the way this ends is going to be the opening starting line, the opening chapter in the bigger CBA, you know, the collective bargaining agreement that has to be nailed down after next season. It expires the end of 2021. If this thing blows up and we lose this season because the two sides can't agree, the future of baseball is in trouble because they got to come back to the table right away and start hammering out a long-term CBA.
TC, I haven't been, like you, overreacting to any one day's worth of news at all through this. When will you start to worry? For me, it's June 1st. When do you worry?
Yeah, I mean, it's really the end of the week. I mean, you got about a week. I'll even give them some of that week. I don't know. It needs to be nailed down by June 1st. And I'm happy that they did not put an ultimatum date there. Because sometimes they'll do that just to spur the discussion. But then if you get to the first and there's no agreement, now it's gloom and doom, times 10. So, June 1st is about the time I'll start to really worry. But by the end of that week, so that's the end of next week, if you're talking the 3rd, 4th, 5th of June and there's no deal in place, then you got real trouble. Because I still think if you got an agreement by the weekend, by the 5th or 6th or even the 7th, you could have camps open up a week later, have a 2 to 3 week camp, and have baseball opening up on July 4th.
Tom Karen with us here on the Huddle, 101.3 The Game, 1013thegame.com. All thanks to Stacey Adamski at Adamski Law. You know, I think right when all this happened, TC, I at least thought it was going to be about money when everybody got back. Then I went completely away from that for a while. And now college sports are going to open up. It's about money. Pro sports, it's about money. Did it kind of amaze you how quickly it all came back to the money?
No, that's professional sports. It's all about the money. That's
college sports isn't professional sports.
Well, yeah, sure it is. College sports, big-time college sports, professional sports. College football is professional sports. All of this is about the money. Now, listen, baseball did it right because they spent 10 days hammering out most of the safety protocols, and it should begin with the safety protocols because if the players aren't going to feel comfortable getting back on a field to play the game, aren't going to feel safe doing this, then there's no point in getting to the money. But eventually it's all going to get to the money. And that's what this is about. Owners have made billions over the years. The valuation of franchises has gone up by billions. And the players love to point out, you know, they weren't giving us a piece of that action, a piece of the increase of the value of their franchise. Now it goes the other way. And the owners are saying, well, the players don't want to share in our losses. So it's both sides protecting what is theirs. It's the American way. It's what this is all about. I'm still optimistic that there's a middle ground to be had here. I think the fact that even though the players are very disappointed at this hour, I think the fact that it was the owners took away the 50-50, took away the salary structure, the revenue sharing that players are so worried about. I think that at least gets you in the arena to get a deal done.
TC, I saw that article by Mike Cole that says, is the Mookie Betts Red Sox reunion possible because of the uncertain economic future? More possible than it was a couple months ago, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, because he's not going to have a huge deal out there waiting for him. I still don't see how it ends up, because if this is because they don't play this season, well, then the Red Sox are still over the salary cap. That means next year, as I've told you guys, they're going to have to get under it next year. So that doesn't make it real easy to sign Mookie Betts.
There's going to be some teams dumping players, TC, in an effort to save money. Are the Sox going to be active in that department, do you think? I mean, you just talked about salary issues.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a few pretty good-sized contracts coming off. I think it's about $30 million, $31 million that'll come off the books anyway. But then you're going to have Devers hit arbitration for the first time. I assume J.D. Martinez is going to keep his deal. So you know, they'll probably be right around where they are. I don't know that they'll look to dump much more salary. I mean, on paper, they should be coming back a little better. But remember, the whole goal with the Red Sox is that next year would be the year they start going after it again, right? Next year, they get active, they spend money, they get that payroll back up there. If they don't play this year, that whole clock is set back another year.
TC, we'll talk about the NHL plan that just came out in a second, but the NBA experimenting or talking about maybe experimenting with the idea of just bringing back the top 16 teams only and reseeding them and getting rid of Western and Eastern Conference. Do you like the idea of doing that in the midst of a season?
Yeah, honestly, I don't really care at this point. For this year, we know it's going to be different. We know it's going to be strange. It's going to be empty arenas. Home court advantage is gone. Home ice advantage is gone. So much of this will be different. I really, honestly, and I hate to sound blasé, I don't care what changes they make, whatever it takes to get the games back. But we know we're always going to look back on the 2020 championships and say those were different. Not necessarily less, just different. And so it doesn't matter how much you change.
Tom Karen, Red Sox Bruins Insider at Nesson with us. Thanks to Stacey Adamski online at AdamskiLaw.com at 802-363-6371. So Gary Bettman just announced the 24-team plan for the NHL. And in this plan, the Bruins would be in the top four group, which means they would have a round-robin tournament to figure out the seeding for the Eastern Conference. Do you like that idea?
I do and I don't. I like the round-robin because it keeps those teams playing. I thought it was ridiculous to even suggest that these teams would have a bye. They've had nothing but a bye here for 10 weeks. So let's get them back on the ice. This allows them to get back on the ice, play the round-robin. You know, I hate the idea that a Bruins team that had the best record, had 100 points, you know, might lose one of these three games in a shootout and finish second or third and then not have the top seed. Because remember, in hockey, unlike other sports, hockey and baseball are the sports where home field matters even beyond the home court. You know, in baseball, you get last wraps, obviously. In hockey, you get the last shift change. And in a playoff series, that's huge as matchups go on and on over a seven-game series. So I don't know. I like what they've done so far to count for something, and I guess it counted for a little something in that they get to be in that top three. I also love the fact that the 24 teams, if I'm looking at it correctly, happens to somehow get Montreal and Chicago in there, so you keep two of your bigger markets happy. I'm sure that had nothing to do with the teams being 24 that get in, but good for hockey. They got it figured out. They're getting ready to go, and we need it.
Why so long to come on back, though? Why is it taking so long to get them back in here?
Well, you've got guys in hockey. You've got guys scattered all over the globe. I mean, it's not, you know what I mean? You got to get them back. You got to get a little dry land stuff. Then you got to get them skating. I mean, this isn't hockey. I mean, this isn't baseball. We can pick up a baseball and essentially at home do your work. None of these guys are skating. I mean, teams are just starting to get on the ice. So you got to have a legitimate training camp to get these guys skating, to get their wind back, to get their even. Listen, I've told you guys this before. I've covered lockout seasons where guys come back on the ice and they're blowing out hamstrings left and right. And you're going to see that again.
Oh, no.
But you got to at least give them time to get on the ice and get going.
Yeah, and of course, then they're ready to go, maybe, sort of. And then they get, you know, a few nights with Tampa and Washington and Philadelphia, the hottest team in the NHL over the last 2 months of the season. So that's
until they ran into the Bruins. Bruins shut them down on March 11th, that last game they played. Hockey is the best of seven series are such a war, such a battle. And I got to admit, I've seen a little bit here in the last hour of the proposal. Haven't seen a really in-depth report on it. So I don't know, and maybe you guys have seen something. Like, what are they doing for depth? You know, there's no AHL. The American Hockey League season's over.
Right.
So I don't know where, you know, we always call them the Black Aces. Those are the guys who skate in the afternoon after everybody's gone back to the hotel for the team meal. And they keep skating. There's a great Paul Carey, who played at BC and won a couple national championships at Boston College. Last year, he spent 2 months as a Black Ace for the Boston Bruins, skating every day, staying in shape, never dressed for a single game.
Wow.
And there are guys like that every year. And he said it was an amazing experience. He's a 31-year-old guy. He was the captain of the Providence Bruins this year. But I talked to him a week or so ago. He had no idea what they were going to be doing. Like, is there a second group of guys skating across town? Is another coach running things? Because with no minor league season, with no Providence Bruins group going, there's no way to call somebody up. So that'll be an interesting thing, is how many guys end up skating around the actual group that's playing in game.
In addition to losing, you know, having the number one seed and being on fire down the stretch, you lose David Pastrnak getting to 50 and maybe 60. I mean, he turns 24 today. Where do you put him on the list of young stars in Boston?
Well, underappreciated, first of all. Yeah. I mean, he's a guy that I don't think we talk nearly enough about outside of hockey. Hockey fans know how special this guy is. And maybe it's because he's just blossoming into his own now, and in the next few years we'll really take him for granted less. But this guy is a dynamic offensive threat every time he's on the ice. And for a young guy to have that kind of ability, and, you know, over the years I've talked to you guys, and, you know, Phil Kessel got away, and we've seen guys come here who look like David Tyler Seguin, you know, a great goal scorer, couldn't figure it out. This guy has been able to mold his game to be a little more of a complete player while keeping that incredible scoring ability, that touch. And he's a pleasure to watch. You're going to go a long way before you find a young guy who can put it in the net like that, so you better appreciate him while you have him.
TC, you're all pumped today. This day in sports history for you from your hometown, I was reading.
Yesterday. Oh. It was 55 years ago yesterday that Muhammad Ali, with a phantom punch, beat Sonny Liston in beautiful Lewiston, Maine, my hometown, the center of the sports universe for one shining night. And that was it. Everybody packed up their bags and left, and Lewiston was left on its own again.
Why was it in Lewiston, Maine?
No, isn't that wild?
You know, there's a great backstory to it. Cassius Clay had converted to the Nation of Islam, which was a very controversial move at the time. And Sonny Liston had, I think, a couple of DUIs and a run-in with the law and was arrested. So this thing became really kind of a scandalous heavyweight championship, especially at the Boston Garden. And they had to move the date a little bit, and Boston used that to just get out of it. They didn't want any part of all the controversy. So they dropped it in a little junior hockey rink in Lewiston, Maine. It was going to be the beginning of great things for my town. Instead, Howard Cosell got on the air at the opening of the broadcast and absolutely ripped Lewiston a new backside, said it was a travesty of the sport to have it in such a ridiculous town.
Wow.
And then Robert Goulet, who sang The Impossible Dream, was a big singer at the time, had been out at a bar and got absolutely hammered and got up on stage, up on the ring, and completely butchered the words of the national anthem to a national audience. And a minute 16 later, the phantom punch, most people think Sonny Liston took a dive to get out of there, and it was over. Everybody was gone. Now, 2 minutes later, the fight was over, and Lewiston was never thought of again.
Wow, I love that.
Not that I'm still fired up about
it. Tom Karen, our Red Sox and Bruin insider, and Nesson, thanks to Stacey Adamski at Adamski Law. TC, you stay safe. We're that much closer to sports being back, so you better get ready to go back to work again.
Oh, cannot wait. I mean, today, I don't know about you guys, but these last couple of days, I know it's not over. And I know, you know, we can't just go running out to bars because we feel like we've done our time.
Yeah.
But for the first time, it feels a little bit like we're starting to turn a corner. Maybe it's just sports, you know. But people are out again. People are still being smart, wearing masks, staying distant. But it feels like we're starting to come to a new normal that we can live with a little bit. I don't know about you guys, but it's been nice the last few days.
Amen to that. TC, thanks a lot, buddy. We'll speak to you next week.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care.